broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
Welcome to episode 223 of the Webcomic Beacon here on webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007, webcomics, comic books, comic news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com for more podcasts and entertainment and information. That's a mouthful. I'm Fess of ArgerComic.com, and with me we have Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
Well, hello there.
And a new trial co-host, we have Kelly Turnbull from thepunchlineismachismo.com, or otherwise known as Manly Guys Doing Manly Things. Welcome to the show.
Hey! Yeah, if you don't want to type all that out, then you can just go manlyguys.com.
Well, okay.
Somebody donated a URL to me.
Manly Guys.
I didn't buy it originally because it sounded too much like a smut site. And then they were like, well, now you have to have it.
Yeah. You probably should have gone with the smut site name because then you might have gotten more traffic, accidental traffic.
No, yeah. I don't. I have Autumn Lake. Everybody tells me it sounds like a porn site, and I don't get any traffic, so I don't believe that's true.
It sounds like a porn site.
Somebody says it sounds like a porn star.
All right. Well, anyway, and moving on, we have also from the online convention that happened a couple months ago, Olaf Moriarty Solstrand from olafsolstrand.no. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, the topic for this week is essentially webcomics. Talking about webcomics.
That's a change of pace for us.
That's a good topic for
just in general. That's what it is. Olaf here has written a thesis on webcomics, and he's also a comic book writer, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I write Donald Duck comics.
Donald Duck comics?
Ooh.
Like an official capacity?
In an official capacity, yes. So I work for a publishing house in Denmark, and they're the biggest publisher in the world when it comes to Disney comics. So,
should we not be swearing on this episode?
No problem.
Okay,
I like swearing.
Okay, I just wasn't sure if you might get in trouble.
I don't like swearing, but I like listening to swearing.
Fuck yeah!
Well, always it turns into one of those those drinking games where it's like, okay, you're not allowed to swear anymore. You're like, shit. Shit!
God damn it! Oh, gee.
Mark, it's not swearing.
It's not. Oh.
Maybe in New England.
Fiddlesticks! Oh.
Poppycock! All right.
God
so,
darn it.
Yeah, we're going to start with Kelly here. You've been on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
Yeah, I got to stop by and talk about Ghost Rider a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So, tell us a bit about your repertoire, but I don't think that's the right word. the things that you do, some things that you have done and things that you do.
Webcomic-wise or just in general?
Everything.
Life-wise? Okay. The webcomic started out as, I entered it, I don't know if you probably saw that Escapist contest that was 2 years ago, where they were trying to, I don't know, no, I was going to say raffle off, but no, it's doing a contest for a paid webcomic gig on their site.
Right.
And
right.
I was unemployed at the time, so I was like, yeah, that sounds like something I could do. So I entered it, and I came in as a runner-up, but enough people seemed horrified that I didn't win that I was like, oh, maybe I can keep this going on my own. So yeah, I've just, made a site for it, and it seems to be doing pretty okay. But everything kind of worked out because as soon as I found out that I didn't have the job with The Escapist, I got hired to work on Comedy Central's Ugly Americans. And then, I just got crazy echo myself.
Sorry, hang on a second. The vocal thing screwed up again. Hello, test.
Oh. Oh, okay. I see what happened. Something happened with I was on vocal and it just put the volume up. Okay, yeah, so I worked on Comedy Central's Ugly Americans, and after that, I moved down to Hollywood to work on Good Vibes for MTV. Okay. And since then, I've just been doing like a lot of ad stuff. We did like the Assassin's Creed animated trailer that was playing on Adult Swim for a while. I worked for PsyOps doing some those MetLife commercials, like the one at the Super Bowl that had like all the characters and stuff in it. So when people bug me to update my comic more than once a week, it's like, I can't, because that's what I do.
You have a real job.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, when I tell people that, it's like, I can't update the comic more because I have a job. They're like, oh, that's so sad that such a talented comic person can't get a, you know, can't make a living doing comics. It's like, well, I can't make a living doing comics because I'm making a living doing animation. It's a fair trade-off.
there's a little bit more challenge to making money off of a webcomic versus, you know, comics, and you have an actual person that wants to pay you money for them, or, you know, somebody to pay money for your work while you're working versus maybe later once you sell the book. Or
I feel bad because people keep bugging me to make like merchandise for it, and it's like, I don't like have the time in my schedule to like organize. I gotta like, I don't know, find some way to hook up with like Topedoco or something so they can just like take the orders for me and I can just give them t-shirt designs.
Well, how many pages do you have for this comic?
I think this week, like this Monday, is going to be the 107th.
Oh, you probably have enough to at least do something that's print on demand, unless your numbers are big enough to take pre-orders for a bigger book, I suppose. But
I'm actually in the middle of a storyline right now, so I was thinking like maybe once that's done, I'll think about like doing something with the book. I kind of have like issues, like I chose a really bad subject to make a webcomic about because it's kind of a joke of the day, like video game gag comic, and I feel weird about selling stuff with like copyrighted characters in it. So, you know, bad choice on my part, but,
That's right, I suppose. I mean, are you actually using them as characters?
Well, I try to keep it to like, you know, Robot Chicken rules where it's like they're enough of a parody that, you know, they could fly under the radar anyway, but I don't know. It's still one of those things where I feel kind of like, eh.
Parody is protected. I'd have to relook at some of your comic that, but I'm not like a lawyer or anything. But you certainly...
I'm pretty sure it would like, you know, passes. You know, it's not worse than you'd see in like I said, Robot Chicken or something, like making fun of the characters. But you know, that's, I always have people telling me to use like you know, like, oh, use Saxon Hale or use like Brock Sampson from Venture Brothers, and it's like, I don't want to use a parody character in a parody comic because that's just copyright infringement.
Well, it's like, how many steps removed are you? I mean, you could make a parody of Brock Sampson, I suppose.
But I don't know. The main character practically is.
Well, yeah, I suppose. let's see here. So that's about that. And you can go to the punchline is machismo.com or manlyguys.com.
Yeah, that came up.
All right. Adjust your porn filter to allow that URL. All right. So now we're going to move on over to Olaf. Am I saying that name correctly?
As correctly as you can in English, I guess. It's... here we pronounce it Olaf.
Olaf.
Anyway works.
All right.
You say whatever you want. I still will reply.
All right.
I had a friend back in high school from Ukraine named like Ola, and he just gave up on anybody in Canada being able to pronounce his name after the first month. He's like, okay, yeah, I'm Ola.
So whatever you want. This is... Okay, so Mr. Solstrand.
Yes.
We've had you were on WebReef, which was an online sort of convention that happened in place of DigiCon because of things happened.
Yes.
And had a panel or a presentation. You're talking about you had written a thesis on webcomics, is that right?
That is right. It is I wrote a master's thesis in documentation science, and I have to stress right away that I wrote this thesis almost 3 years ago. So things have changed since I wrote it.
Well, let's start off with okay, what were you going to school for that you were able to write a thesis on webcomics?
As I was saying, I am a librarian, and in Norway we have two ways to get that education. You can take the regular boring librarian school, or you can go to documentation science, and that's pretty awesome because that's just studying everything that has to do with documents or documentation, and I love that. So we look at how are things produced and how are things communicated. It's kind of related to media science, but...
Okay.
Is that the sort of thing that might lead to a job at a National Archives or something like that?
Yes. I worked the public library, so that's the kind of work you get from that. But I guess it's in my opinion, it's also a great springboard for getting into digital media. I work on building web pages, and I think that with the background in documentation science, I have a much clearer view of what I'm doing.
So, when you talk to your professor about doing your thesis on webcomics, what did they say?
They were very cool with it. A few years earlier, somebody else did their thesis on comics, and people have been doing their theses on the wildest things. I think somebody wrote a thesis on horses. It's a very open and do whatever you want kind of subject. Everything can be a document. Everything that communicates something to somebody is a document.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking at webcomics, and yeah, that's cool. Problem at all.
I just thought, with that idea that you're talking about, have you seen those they're called image memes? Or Rage Comics, where they have it's essentially the same sort of image, and they'll change what the subtitle is, or they'll modify the image just a little bit. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I would love to see a thesis on those, because those are so...
Yes.
Wow.
I feel like you could do a thesis on those, but at the same time, it would feel like as much of a bastardization as doing a thesis on those... they were reformatting classic literature so you could read it and chat speak on your cell phone. It's sign of the times. I don't know.
Yeah, it's fully possible to write a thesis on that, especially in a subject like this. Mm-hmm. So I can say one of the most important things in documentation science is that. Okay, the biggest question is, what is a document? And the only answer we have so far is pretty much anything. But
it's like anything, asking, what is art?
Yeah, what is art? And what is a document? It's pretty much the same discussion. It's there has been hundreds of theories on that. But my professor had three dimensions of every document. He said that every document consists of three dimensions. So you have the material dimension, and you have the social dimension, and you have the mental dimension. And I think I will use the webcomics as an example here. The mental dimension is what we normally think of as the webcomics. That's the story you're telling. That's the images. What you think of as the webcomic. The material dimension, that is the technology you're using. So for a webcomic, that's the computer, that's the pen and paper you use before you scan if you don't draw directly on a computer. That's your reader's computer. If you make print comics, that's the printing press, but it's also the computers you use to process everything. So that's all the technology. Then there's the social dimension, which is what I was focusing on in my thesis. That's the people surrounding the document. So when you make a webcomic, your culture will affect what you're making, and the culture of your readers will affect how they read it, and the time and era people live in, and all the things like that. And I think that's the most interesting part of webcomics, because when we think of webcomics, or more precisely, when we think of webcomics as opposed to print comics, which is the discussion we often have, we tend to focus on the material stuff. So have you read Reinventing Comics, Scott McCloud?
Not that one.
Yeah.
That's the second one, right?
And I think that's a great book, but opposed to his other books, that's his theories and his ideas on what will the future bring. And seeing the future is very difficult. And I think he fails on one area, and that is he focuses only on the material things. He looks at this is the new technology, this is the future technology, and here's what we can do with that technology. And that's an interesting question, but if you ask only that question, you will forget to ask, well, what should we do with technology? Is there a point in doing this? You can use Flash and HTML5 and stuff to make animation and so sound and really boost up your webcomics, but are we as creators interested in doing that? Are our readers interested in reading that? So that's what I was writing my thesis on. Mm-hmm. So I tried talking to people and doing some surveys and figuring out what do we want from webcomics, not mm-hmm. just what can we do, because that's an interesting question, but that's the question everybody asks.
So you're looking at it more from the consumer angle versus a creator angle.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that we should do only what the readers want. We should try new things and we should experiment.
Of course.
But you have to look at what are they expecting. And if you make something that the readers don't really want, then you have to be prepared to work much harder to get the truth to them.
True. I mean, there's the aspect of the customer is always right, so to speak. And the logic behind that is if you give the customers what they want, they'll use your service or they'll give you money for what they want. But then again, a lot of people in webcomics are here because they want to do what they want. And they can, because there's no bar of entry. They can just come on in and do whatever they want, regardless of if it sells or not.
I did a panel a while back at a convention I went to just on – it was on character design, but it seems like the same kind of – you know, it was like character design and how they fit in the story and stuff like that. But it sort of applies to the whole process, because it was basically talking about how, like, you know, there's the story that you want to tell and it's in your head and it's like, you know, the pure story that you've got that – basically appeals only to you, and then it's like how much you're going to dilute it to like appeal to the lowest common denominator, because it's like, you know, the more, you know, you kind of open it up for everybody, like in character design sense, we were talking about like how Tintin is like a perfect example, because it's like, you know, the character is basically like a round face with a smiley face on, you know, it's like there's like no specific, it's like so non-specific in that it's like anybody can kind of like get into it. Nobody's getting something that they don't expect, but then it's like the more specific you make it, you get into kind of like R. Crumb territory where it's like, you know, this is something that lives in this guy's head and like only he's going to totally get. So it's like, you know, the question is kind of like, do you want to make a comic for your audience or do you want to make a comic for like you, and then anybody who enjoys it, like, good on them.
Yeah.
Just to bring up a guy, JT, who does the webcomic Between Failures, points out that I'm going to try to wrangle the conversation to talk about my own comic. And I'm going to do that now for just a second, just because it's it's context for understanding the situation. When I started my webcomic, it's like, I just wanted to make a comic that I wanted to do. And if anybody else happened to like it, hey, that'd be cool. And then over time, you know, you learn things and you grow as a creator. And then you get a little bit more concerned about your readers. You know, it's like you want to make sure that, because you start, you see, if you don't have any readers to begin with, this is my theory, you don't care as much if you want to do something that you just want to do. But once you start getting readers, then it's like, it's like a drug. You want more and more readers, so you have a concern about if they're liking what's going on or if you're explaining things well enough.
I just want any readers.
Yeah. Well, and there's like really a balance you have to set. Like I actually really fell into a funk with it a while back because I just had so many people basically like complaining at me that my comic wasn't what they wanted it to be. And I had, you know, I have the people who want it to be like some like continuing story. And I have the people who get mad when I have story and they just want it to be a gag a day. And like, no matter what I put up, I felt like I was getting people just like complaining at me. And I was like feeling really down about it. And then I remembered, I heard the story about like Mickey Mouse. Like when you watch the old Mickey Mouse cartoons, like the, you know, Plain Crazy and Steamboat Willie and stuff, like he's kind of a dick. Like he's not a huge... Yeah, and I guess people, like, when Mickey Mouse started picking up popularity, people wrote into Disney and they were saying, like, oh, well, Mickey can't do this. Mickey has to be a role model. Mickey has to be a nice guy. And they just, like, sanded down the corners. So, like, now Mickey Mouse, like, doesn't really have a discernible personality. You know, he's just kind of the most agreeable thing that no one can find any issue with. And it's like, you kind of, like, that's the spectrum. You can, like, either offend everybody or you can be Mickey Mouse. And you have to figure out, like, where you want to put that slider in between them.
Yeah, you have to find the balance, be somewhere in between there. But because you have to do what you want to do, but do you just want to make a webcomic, or do you also want readers or a way to make money?
All three.
I mean,
yeah.
Well,
so as I was saying, you don't have to find the common denominator and make everything very, very reader friendly, but you have to be prepared to do the extra work if you want to do something different.
Yeah.
I've hit a point where it's like sometimes people will say something to me, like, you know, they'll send me an email or like leave a comment on my site or something, and it's like where like 6 months ago I would have tried to defend myself and I would have tried to like change things and accommodate them. Now I'm like, maybe if they don't like my comic, they'll stop like sending me emails and going to my site.
If you don't like it, too bad. And with that, we're going to take our first break. And when we come back, we'll continue this lively discussion.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
I had just bought Goldwave, which is what I used to record the Webcomic Beacon.
Oh, you got a real copy now.
I actually bought it, yeah. Well, because it's like 15 years old, the whole company. And I've been using it since it was free. And so once, you know, I got to the internet and then it started to pay, you had to pay for it. And then I found BitTorrent sites. It's like, I don't have money. And then I did have money. And then I meant to buy it. I meant to buy it for like a year now. But I bought it now. So it's different. So I have to learn how to use it again. But,
I was like, on my old computer, I had, I think the program's called like Wiretap. And it was great because it's just like it records whatever audio is like playing on your computer. So you can, you know, basically pirate things easier, like record stuff from YouTube videos and stuff.
Oh, right, right.
But I was like, yeah, I should put that on my computer. And I was like, I'm going to buy this. And I went to the site and they got rid of like the kind of the consumer grade version. And you have to get like the pro version that's like $70. And it's like, I'm not going to pay $70 for this.
Yeah. Let's see here. There's a couple bits of news that I wanted to go over that I just haven't mentioned for a while. We have, if people have been noticing, the Webcomic Beacon newscast is a part of the Webcomic Beacon feed. I've explained that before, that it was part of an issue with the newscast feed not working, and it might as well just be a part of the Webcomic Beacon feed, but it is still a separate show. They've changed their style recently, so if anybody didn't like this style after Ross got left, I say go ahead and check it out, listen to it once again. Also, check out the Neil Adams interview that the newscast did. That's really fun, about an hour long. And, you know, the Webcomic Beacon newscast on the show post, that's where we I post, like, the milestones that people have sent in and things like that. Also, I'm going to be tying in the Webcomic Beacon newscast into the Webcomic Z. It's the webcomic list site. I'm trying to turn it into sort of like a news and information sharing site as best that I can. We've got somebody who's doing webcomic reviews now. Might be looking for another person to do those as soon as I figure out the embedded Webcomic Z review style that I didn't pay attention to. We are using, let's see here, if anybody knows the webcomic Epic Fail, she does, Amy Letts does interviews, like text interviews with webcomic creators, and she's letting us repost them on the Webcomic Z site, so that's really fun. And same thing for Jules Rivera. She said that we can repost her art tutorials. So we're going to be looking into more things like that. I'm also going to be looking for somebody, if I can find somebody who's interested in basically scouring the web to make, like, lump posts of, like, tutorials. So, like, if somebody goes around and finds, like, five different how to draw women properly sort of tutorials, and then we can do, like, a bulk tutorial post, you know, things like that are some things we're looking for to increase content of the site.
I've got a post on how to draw abs if you just want people to put abs everywhere. Not the best abs.
Yeah. Or reposting your tutorial again like that, you know, trying to create more content for the site. I mean, the site gets a decent amount of traffic, and, you know, anybody who writes a post or contributes information, you know, that's their post, and we'll put a banner ad to their site on the post as well, and then get it promoted on the Webcomic Beacon newscast, or at least on the newscast post, et cetera, trying to make something of this thing that I bought a couple years ago and actually should do something with to not lose the money I invested on it. All right, now I just got to cross off those things. I mentioned those, and I'll mention a few more things once we come back. But we're going to get back to talking about webcomics, talking about the creator element as well as the reader element. As we were talking about earlier, you know, if you are looking to, you know, make something of your comic, use it as a base for getting popular, famous, making money, that sort of thing, you don't want to discount what the readers want, but you also don't want to sacrifice your own integrity just for the reader's sake, because readers, lots of them have different opinions, and yeah. You'll get people that'll like something, and you'll get people that'll hate
something.
Everyone
happy.
Yeah, never, you'll never,
never.
You can't make all the people happy all the time, and I forget the phrase, how does it go? You can't please everybody all the time. And, yeah, you can't please everybody. I don't know.
Or anybody, if you look at my viewership.
Well, yeah, it's something about trying to please everybody, you won't please anybody or something.
Yeah.
Ah, son of a bitch. The vocal thing just keeps crashing on me. We try to broadcast live at webcastbeacon.com/live, and we're using vocal right now, but they're...
They're talking about you being booted.
trying to broadcast live while recording is somewhat of an issue, and we're trying to figure out why. But
everyone in the chat is cheering, so they say
hooray!
You do love them.
And we'll take questions from their live chat room. Utilize the app to ask questions or ask text questions, and we'll look at those. It's easier to find than just through the chat, so that is quite all right. Let's see. Somebody else talk for a while. I'm talking way too much.
I totally had something to talk about, but it, you know, I don't know. I was thinking, like, you know, on the subject earlier about, just like how much of yourself you're going to put into it. Like, I don't know. It's like there are those archetypical characters that are, you know, they're basically like pre-made. You know, you can go to TV Tropes or something, and you'll find like any given trope. It's like people like those characters because they're used to them, and they kind of it's like you have to strike that right balance of like giving the audience like what they want and they expect, but like surprising them enough that they're, you know, they want to stick around. Like, you know, it's not bad to use those archetypes. Like there are people who get it in their heads that like everything they make just has to be 100% original. And, you know, people talk about like, oh, you're going to pitch a show. Well, make sure it's not comparable to like any other show. And it's like, well, if you do that, they're just going to be lost. Like, you know, sometimes people like to hear, yeah, it's like Flapjack, except, you know, they're like, all right, I'm on the same page as you, but the volume came back now and I'm,
echoing.
You're echoing?
Just on myself here.
Hang on, I can fix that.
No, it was just Vocaloid. Like it came back and.
Oh, okay. All right. Up.
I had it muted. Totally lost my train of thought now.
You're saying it's like you're trying to utilize tropes, but not utilize tropes.
Yeah, it's like you want them to be like you enough that they're still like. You know, you don't just want to say, like, okay, here's my handsome hero guy. Like, you know, there are a million handsome hero guys. Like, what makes that one the one that your audience should go to? And, like, how, like, what are you giving them that they can't get anywhere else?
Yeah. That's a very good point. And as somewhat related thoughts that just popped into my head, are the reader's expectations the same for webcomics as they are for print comics? As they are for TV shows, as they are for movies? I don't think so.
I find that with pacing a whole lot. Like it's sort of like every page has to be like a revelation unto itself. And so I was in this comic tournament on DeviantArt like years ago. And, you know, you're making like, it's supposed to be like one comic that you can sit down and read as like a first page to last page thing, but you're updating it like every day. And so you expect, you try to make every page like a story unto itself. So then when you read it out, like in the end, it feels like, you know, there's just a deep breath. It's like, it feels very staccato because it's like things stop and start and stop and start and stop and start.
Yeah.
Well,
that's kind of unique for webcomics. When I write the Donald Duck comic, I never have to sit down and think, okay, now I have to think about the reader who will open this magazine on page 7 and read from there. And that's not an issue.
Well, here's the thing. You're from Norway, you said?
Yeah.
I'm assuming you have newspapers. And do you have comics in the newspapers, like daily comics in the newspapers?
Yes, we have.
But you see, that's somewhat similar to web comics, except that you really can't go back into the archive unless you keep all your newspapers.
Yes, of course, the archive is the big difference between newspaper comics and web comics. One more difference is that in web comics you have much more freedom. You can do whatever you want. You don't have to censor everything for the newspapers. If you want to make one comic twice as big as your regular format, you can do that. But yeah, of course, when it comes to access to the reader, then yeah. But then a newspaper is, I don't know, 60 pages, and nobody will buy that newspaper just to read your comic. And when they come to your website, the comic is what brings them there. So that's a completely different format altogether when you think about it. You have to kind of have single gags. You have to have a gag a day if you want to work, and you have can have a storyline. I love most of Bill Watterson's storylines, but all the newspaper strips have to work as single strips.
Right.
Yeah, I think part of the advantage of the newspaper is that you've got, you know, there's going to be like 40 strips in the newspaper, whatever. I don't know if it's Sunday or not, but you know, you're going to have like a lot of strips working together. So if you're like, oh, Family Circus isn't really selling it today, but I've still got Sherman's Lagoon. Like it's sort of like there's, you know, they sort of prop each other up, but like when people go to your site, chances are like that's all that's going to be there is like just your comic. So if your comic's kind of like not getting them that week, then like especially if you have a comic like, you know, like my comic updates once a week, so if I don't sell people like that day, then it's like they're disappointed with me the whole week.
But they can check out more. That's the thing. And that's certainly an issue where especially the less frequently you update, like say if you update once a week versus every day, you know, you kind of got the pressure to make sure that that's good enough, or like the start and stop with it, basically making not like a gag a day, but like a gag a day that's stretched out into a page almost. And then if you have a little bit more space to work with the story, because one thing I've noticed in newspaper comics, especially when they have an ongoing story, and Mark does this actually in his comic, I've noticed.
Oh, me?
Yeah, you do. Oh, you do. I don't know whether it was conscious or subconscious, but when you have like a storyline in like a newspaper strip, you got usually 3 to 5 maybe panels. The first panel usually is a somewhat recap of like the last thing that was said in the last update, and then the last one sort of brings it home just enough, and then it just kind of restarts. So you really got like two and a half panels of moving forward. One of the things you consider with any sort of like storytelling device is the time you have to tell it. When you got like your monthlies, you got 20 pages right there, boom. So you can have a page that doesn't entirely go nowhere, or strictly for setting up a sort of situation or a feel or a mood. In webcomics, you can do that as well. The more often you update, the readers are a little bit more willing to wait. But if you got like, if you have a weekly updating webcomic, I would not update a title page for 1 week. I mean, if you're really popular enough, you can get away with it more because people, it's popular already. They already like it. They're willing to, okay, you need a break this week, whatever. People are less forgiving if you're just coming out and then your update for the week is a title page. It's like,
Yeah.
Yeah, I do big pages, but usually, I don't know, I kind of tell these like rambling jokes that, you know, it's like you could easily crop it up into like 3 rows and just get like 3 little lame jokes out of it. I don't know. It's like, I'm not going to say every one of my scripts is a winner. But like with now that I'm kind of in the middle of a story, like I started a story arc because, you know, I've got Club Kawaii on my Tumblr dashboard, so I get to see everybody's like super bishy bastardizations of like Fallout characters every day. So I did a storyline where it's like all the macho guys turn into like Bishonen kind of like deviant art versions of themselves, and it's like I just try to make like every page tell like a concise thought. And
One of the worst things I know about, did I interrupt you?
I was just going to say, like, every page kind of, like, it has a joke and it moves the story forward. Like, there's, like, a revelation every update.
Yeah. Because one problem with many webcomics, if you have story-driven strips, then you have perhaps 3 panels, and the first panel is a recap, and the third panel is always a cliffhanger, because they want you coming back tomorrow. And that's sometimes silly. Oh no, I forgot to buy the milk. That's a cliffhanger.
Yeah, I mean, unless like we were talking earlier, as far as what the creator wants to do, one of the things that's not, I don't think, is done, it's starting to happen a little bit more with the monthlies, like Marvel, DC, you know, those sort of comic books. And it's starting to happen a little bit more in webcomics. And that's sort of, in webcomics, it's called writing for the archives, so to speak, or it used to be called that. Though you could probably call it now writing for the comic book, versus like the comic books are writing for the trade. So you'll pick up like a monthly and you'll feel like the story is too decompressed, as in Like with the DC New 52, I picked up Supergirl number 1, 2, and maybe number 3. And I think all of 1 and 2 and a little bit of number 3 should have been number 1. It was so decompressed.
Well, I was reading a Planet Hulk card, not Planet Hulk, World War Hulk card cover, because my boyfriend was like, "Oh yeah, you got to get into like Hercules. You'll love Hercules." And so I got this hardcover, and it's like, oh, I just jumped into like the most, you know, context dense part of it, where it's like you kind of have to know who everybody is. And it was like you could tell. I'm sure that if I was reading these issues like, you know, once a month, it would feel like, you know, like the story was paced well, but like just reading through it, it felt like it was just like time skipping over, you know, it's like, okay, so we're here. And now it's like 7 hours later with no explanation. And now it's like a week later. And I was like, why is this moving so fast?
Yeah, there's that. I mean, especially when you have like webcomic there. I mean, I knew that there are some webcomics, which, you know, they might update once a week. And they don't really lend themselves as into why should I read this? I mean, nothing really happened. It's like, you know, then you get people that'll come back maybe once a month or every couple of months and then just read a whole bunch. And that sometimes even happens with stuff that updates 3 times a week, 2 times a week. Just depending on the pacing, people don't, you know, the readers may not want to sit, you know, come back for not enough stuff. Basically not enough story for a sitting. And so they'll come back every once in a while and read a whole bunch. Certainly that can screw with your numbers on your website if you have like advertising or if you're trying to gauge how many readers you got. That's certainly a concern. My rule of thumb is usually, in general, is if you update more often, the more people are willing to forgive as far as like art. If you update every single day with, you know, black and white, like a black and white strip, you know, you're updating every day and people are going to be coming for everyday content. But if you're going to update a very nice, you know, full page, full color once a week, you know, a lot of times people are willing to wait for that because they get like a nice big piece and there's a lot of effort into that. It can certainly vary, of course, but...
Well, there's stuff like the Meek by Dershing Helmer is like my favorite webcomic hands down right now, but I don't check that like as the pages update. Like I prefer the flow of the story. You know, I feel kind of like I'm doing a disservice to her storytelling by like reading them in like, you know, the stag, you know, kind of once a week updates. So I just wait until she has a whole chapter up and then I just go and I read the whole chapter. It's have you ever read Platinum Grit? It's by the like Trudy Cooper, I think, who does Ogloff.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, it started like it was an underground comic, I guess, kind of, you know, one of those like Xeroxed in somebody's basement kind of things back before there were web comics. Like I love those kind of things. My aunt's like, you know, pretty active on the comic scene kind of out in BC. So she when I was a kid, she used to send me like all these like, you know, Mad Raccoons and Moo Press and stuff like that. So Trudy Cooper is one used to be like, you know, it was an underground comic like that. And when, you know, web comics became the thing, they just kind of moved it online. And it's not a great example because it seems kind of dead right now, but they would update it in a whole, like, they wouldn't update it until they had a whole new chapter finished. So you weren't getting it, like, page at a time. You were just, like, sitting down and reading the whole thing in one go.
Actually, I'm starting to notice that a little bit more. There's a comic called, I think it's called Serenity Rose. And I think the person that does that also does a comic called Eldritch or something like that. And that will update, like, it'll not, like, update all of itself, but it'll start doing updates, I think, every, you know, couple seasons. So it'll take, like, a couple seasons off, and then it'll come back. So, like, a seasonally updated comics. And I would like to get this person on the show and ask them about how, you know, how well that works out for them. But I'm starting to notice this a little bit more that some, especially when they got the print comic book in mind, they're really wanting to push the actual comic book, either to get noticed by X publisher or just, you know, they have enough popularity. It's something to look into. I mean, the webcomics model, so to speak, has in the past, you know, three years easily has been really diversifying as far as what's becoming successful as far as gaining popularity and just being able to make money off of. And this is certainly something we can explore more in another show, but we've had an episode maybe last year about they have like the first chapter available as a free PDF, and then they sell like all the other chapters. It doesn't update like a web comic, which is sort of like, you know, how newspaper comics update. You know, it's just sort of there. It's not collected. Mm-hmm. But basically every once in a while they'll release an issue, like an entire issue. So there's many different ways that people are trying to go about this, and I don't know where I'm going with this right now.
It's like I keep having like things that I'm coming up with, and I'm like, I could interject here, and then I'm like, oh wait, he's on a different topic, and I've lost track of
yes,
this.
Yes, sorry, talk. What were you going to say?
Well, wait.
I did need to go to a break. That's where I was going. I do need to take a break, and we'll be right back. The Geek Life Podcast is, get this, a discussion of all things geek. Technology, movies, television, books, comics, games, nothing is off limits. Join Mike, Paul, Richard, and Melissa at The Geek Life Podcast at thegeeklife.tv.
I never had much luck with girls. They never liked to read and learn. But I like to. And if I could figure out the cosine of your heart, that'd be a good start. Oh, yes, it would. I never try to date offline. Use algorithms built to find a 7 out of 9. So if you look half as great as Aaron on Farscape, you'll be my first mate, 'cause baby, we'll be in the chat room on the IRC. To me, you know I dress up like Jedi, not to Klingon guys. My face is gonna set to fry. I'll be your fanboy in my Starfleet uniform. It matches the one worn by Leonard Nimoy. So baby, we'll be in the chat room. To me, PC, pick up that guitar and talk to me.
Nerdy to me.
That was Talk Dirty to Me by Possible Oscar, found at The Funny Music Project at thefump.com.
Oh,
all right, and we're back!
I have to apologize to the person in the chat room that I got reading Platinum Grid, apparently, because it's like, you'll be in the same boat that I am, that you're just like, oh no, update again, but I don't know if they're working together anymore.
Okay, so what was the point we were trying to make? I have no idea. Oh, yes, I wanted to get back. Okay, wait. Kelly, did you have something to add before?
I totally, lost my train of thought.
Okay. I'm sorry.
It's
Olaf. Olaf.
Yeah.
Okay. As I was saying, the webcomics, so to speak, model has really changed, especially in the last 3 years. What was sort of the situation when you started writing your thesis as far as the so-called model of webcomics, for the most part?
Well, the most popular things, and I only talked with the Norwegian people, so it's perhaps a cultural difference there, but... the most popular stuff were basically short strips, humor, something that you can read in 30 seconds and then put away, just something to make you laugh on your lunch break.
I was talking to the guys who do Cyanide and Happiness about that, and we were saying that, those kind of comic strips are like the potato chips of the comic world. Like, it's, you can just, consume a whole stack of them so fast, and it's kind of like they don't stay with you long, but it's like they're just addictive. It's like you can't eat just one. You're stuck in, the archives, and you've, instantly read, 600 XKCD scripts or something.
Yeah.
But then the more long-form comics, it's like, they apparently have a harder time getting those big numbers. You don't have as many people going to read Lackadaisy as you do reading The Oatmeal, which, from an outside perspective, it's like, this is a travesty because that's, it's such a gorgeous comic. But, at the same time, it's like you're sitting down to eat a steak dinner. You gotta make some time for it. You can't just mindlessly consume it. You have to prepare yourself for the emotional roller coaster this comic is going to put you through and, make time to think about it.
Yeah, and one thing I have to say when you bring up XKCD, do we have a different expectation for the art style in webcomics than we have in print comics? Can you imagine Randall Monroe drawing Spider-Man?
I've spent a lot of time at Beguiling in Toronto, where they have all the the weird underground comics and stuff like that, and it's like I could definitely see some of the stuff that makes it into print. I don't think he'd be doing Spider-Man, but no. See him making published volumes of something that would move off the shelves at TCAF, the Toronto Comic Art Festival.
I don't know. The webcomics do allow a lot more variety of artists and art styles and storytelling styles than anything in print, of course. And I think part of what lends itself to that is that you can drive by comics so much easier. It's just comics are a click away and you'll find a variety of readers right away versus going to a comic book store. Certainly you can thumb through a lot, but that's the thing. You can thumb through a lot and there's just not as much of a diversity of comic art.
I think it really depends on the comic store you're going to. Cause like I was saying, if you go into a store that really caters to the independent creator owned crowd and stuff like that, like I was saying, Beguiling in Toronto is my absolute favorite comic store in the world. It's aside from my friends in Toronto, is probably the thing I miss most about living in Toronto. And the whole bottom floor is just full of creator owned kind of like auto bio comics. And it's basically print versions of web comics. They sell print web comics there, but you wouldn't be able to tell any difference between them and some of the indie stuff and some of the real, they've got a whole shelf of authentic, Xeroxed and Kinko's kind of indie stuff like that.
Okay.
And,
so you're saying you could possibly find XKCD or The Oatmeal in your store.
Oh yeah. Beguiling and stuff. And, and Meltdown, there's, I forget
it's not all that common, though.
There's this book, I think it's called like Henry Loves Glenn or something, and it's just a bunch of artists making stupid like black and white cartoons about Glenn Danzig and Henry Rollins in like a long-term committed relationship with each other. And it's like, it's totally the kind of thing you'd see on a webcomic, but you can buy it for like $7 at Meltdown.
Huh. Well, again, that's not typical.
Yeah, it's not like the big two, you know, it doesn't have a publishing label behind it like DC or Marvel or anything like that, but right. I feel like the webcomic is almost like the, you know, your website that you put your comic on is almost like a storefront for your like underground indie comic, like.
Well, there are webcomic community sites all about promoting each other's stuff, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And you can consider that a big store. So to speak, storefront.
An interesting thing about diversity, I live in a country where superheroes aren't really that big a thing. Mm-hmm. So we don't have that much superhero comics. But I was watching a documentary about webcomics when I was writing my thesis. I think it's called Adventures into Digital Comics. And they mentioned there that... out of the 50 most sold print comics in the United States, there were 49 superhero comics.
Mm. I believe it.
And yeah, I was overwhelmed with that because I'm not exposed to superheroes on a daily basis. But wow!
I've heard some of the numbers are kind of tipping with like the. I don't know, the exposure that some other creator-owned stuff is getting thanks to, like, TV shows and stuff like that. Like, mm-hmm. The best-selling graphic novels from the last year, I think, were, like, Scott Pilgrim and Walking Dead, and, like, neither of those are superhero titles, and it's just because of the movie and the TV show, so everybody's, like, kind of going out and paying more attention to the strips.
Mm-hmm. That's great, because these numbers are a few years old, so they may have changed, but I think that sounds... awesome if things are changing, because 49 out of 50 comics were superhero comics and number 50 was Star Wars. I think that's not very diverse.
Well, I
love just creator-owned stuff and like indie stuff, and like I love, you know, I'm not big on superheroes. I think the only Marvel or DC title I'm reading right now is Punisher Max. But I was in Australia a couple of weeks ago, and it just totally, like, floored me, because we went into some shops, and, like, they had just as much indie stuff and kind of, like, alternative press stuff on display as they had superhero stuff, and it's like, you never see that. Like, you go into Meltdown in Los Angeles, and, like, that's like, the big kind of diverse store there, and they have tons of stuff, but it's like, the superhero stuff is all... fanned out, so it's like it's what you see the covers of, and then all the other stuff is like sitting on shelves, so all you see is the spine, and it's like, you know, theoretically it's there and you can take it off the shelf, but it's, you judge books by their covers, like there's no way around it. So, you know, it's just sort of like, you know, being in this other country, and they just give as much, I guess, floor space to these other titles that, you know, I was buying all these comics that cost, you know, like 30% more than they would if I bought them in the States, just because it's like, oh, it's here and I can see it and I know I'm going to forget about it if I don't buy it right now.
Yeah. There are huge cultural differences between how we see comics in different countries. If you come to Norway, there are comic book stores, but that's not where most people buy comics. We have comics for sale in most grocery stores. Mm-hmm. Not much superheroes. The only
I want to ask about the sort of like comic situation. Like you said, they're sold in grocery stores. What is like the typical rating? I mean, are like a lot of these, like especially in the grocery stores, a lot of them just like kid friendly, or can you find like PG-13 or R rated comics in a grocery store in Norway? Sort of.
Yeah, I would think so. The most popular comics here are, there are some of the old stuff that's been around forever. There's Donald Duck, there's the Phantom. But most of the comics are collections of newspaper strips.
Like in a comic book, or in like a big publication?
No, in No, in issues, in magazines of, I don't know, 40, 50 pages, where you have some of the most successful newspaper strip creators in Norway, and they collect some of their strips, and they have guest strips, and
that's cool.
Yeah, that's and that has been the biggest thing around here for at least 10 years now. And we're
As far as superhero comics, do you have some, and are they like Norwegian specific superheroes that you have, or what do you got?
We have not very much Norwegian specific superheroes. When you grew up with Marvel and DC, we grew up with the French and Belgian comics. So we,
so, I'm jealous.
Yeah. So the Norwegian comic creators are mostly inspired by Asterix and Tintin, and later Calvin and Hobbes, and things like that. So, if you pick up a regular Norwegian comic book, you will find lots of comic strips about characters every Norwegian knows, and you will see the inspiration from Calvin and Hobbes there. And in the art, you will see somewhat of still of an inspiration from old French comics.
And I love European comics. Like they have so many like, you know, Euro Disney guys working in them, and they're just like so vibrant. And, you know, like you hear people argue back and forth about like manga versus like American comics. And it's like, I'm like, I don't know, European comics put them both to shame because it's just, you know, so much life in them, but it's so disappointing because in America, they don't want to take a chance on them. Like, I don't know if it's just because like their color and they're kind of big and lush in that, and they don't come out as regularly as like, you know, manga comes out like, you know, a comic a week basically. But, like, I don't know if it's just like all the color and that is a, you know, a bigger publishing risk to take or what, but, like, you know, I love Black Sad, and they almost didn't translate, I think, the third one, like Red Soul or Red Heart or something, because they were saying, like, oh, yeah, there's like, no market for it in America. And it's like, Black Sad is one of the most popular comics that, you know, like, European comics that they're printing here. So I'm like, if Black Sad can't make it, like, nothing else will.
Well, here's the thing. It's, like somebody mentioned in the chat room, most, Neri Kirmi says, if I'm saying that wrong, but most other places aren't nearly as uptight as the U.S. Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's not the consumers. It's the publishers. They're not willing to take a chance. And this is, I think, a good opportunity. I mean, if you had, like, Tintin or some of Tintin or some of these other comics as a web comic sampling, you know, just available for people to check out, you know, maybe if not a print version possibly, but there's, you know, plenty of opportunity to try and sell like e-comic versions, e-book versions of these things. The thing is, we don't know about them. And then it's also, you know, to get it over here, it's because of, you know, the extra added costs of, you know, specialty comics, essentially, you know, from another, you know, they cost more. So you got less and less people that are willing to take a risk by spending twice to three times as much on a comic book. That's, you know, it's that's part of the thing. And that's where webcomics, at least some presence in the webcomic sphere, could potentially increase increase your exposure, you know, and potentially increase your sales.
You definitely wouldn't be seeing, like, you know, publishers, you know, like, if you pitch, like, I feel like if you pitch The Meek to somebody, you know, they'd be like, so there's this, like, naked girl starring in the first, like, I don't want to touch this. But actually, I was just thinking about it a couple of weeks ago when you guys did your heavy metal episode. It's like, I love heavy metal. Like, heavy metal is practically, like, Tokyo Pop for European comics. But it's like, I feel like they're sort of part of the reason that people are so, like, hesitant in North America to pick them up, because it's like, you know, the way they're sold with, like, the cheesy airbrush covers and like the kind of heavy metal reputation. It's like people see the comics that they run in there and they're just like, oh, they're like trashy smut comics, right? And it's like, no, like,
well, they,
I don't know. I guess heavy metal, like, as a publishing house has had some, like, they don't get on making collections very quick. Like, I'm still waiting for them to put out, you know, the second volume of Gypsy. But, you know, like, Sky Doll is gorgeous. Like, I don't know if you've seen Sky Doll, but it's, It's like the only comic that I see that I'm like, I would be content if I just drew like that. Like, I just want to be this guy. But for the longest time, the only place that you could buy Sky Doll was like a back issue of Heavy Metal. So it's got like a cheesy airbrushed like space girl on the cover. And, you know, it's full of ads. And I guess Marvel just recently bought it, like bought the rights to it. And so, like, you know, I'm like, oh, finally, because Marvel's put out, like, the nice hardcover edition that it deserves. And I think every webcast or, like, podcast I go on, I tell people to buy Sky Doll, because it's like, if you buy it, they'll print more.
Well, we had a few episodes ago, we had somebody on that does a webcomic called Gates, which is, like, the only webcomic that's presented by Heavy Metal. So we talked about the Heavy Metal website and how it's basically terrible. it looks like it's slightly improved from like the 90s to like 90. It's like a 1996 website that's made into like 1998. It's just terrible. And it's like, yeah, it's like, you know, that's the thing. It's like, I had no idea they were still around, you know, sort of thing. I let alone they actually had a website. They were like in the 80s, maybe a little bit in the 90s, and then they kind of disappeared because you just never pay it. You know, it's like, yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, these people aren't taking advantage of the webcomics models that are out there. Just for getting people to know that, we're still existing. No, we don't do smutty things and whatever. Don't pay attention to Heavy Metal 2000, the movie.
It's like, just because there's boobs in it doesn't mean it's porn.
I mean, yeah, it's gratuitous, yes. I mean, by all means, absolutely. Is it sexist? Absolutely, yes. But there's still story there and content and such.
Stuff.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing.
One thing that kind of annoys me about using the internet is that there are still some people trying to figure out how to do it. What can we do with comics on the internet? How can we make web comics? How can we put comics on the web? And people have been doing that for 10 or 15 years, 20 years perhaps.
Yeah.
And why can't you just look at the model and try to see what have people done before you?
Mm-hmm.
Not everything works, but some things are pretty well tested and could be copied.
Mm-hmm. And
I feel like the people who go and they read your webcomic, like, you know, it's almost like the people who would go and it's like, if the comic's made, people are going to be able to pirate it no matter what. So it's like, whether you put it up for free of your own accord or whether people pirate it and then decide they like it and buy it, it seems like it's, you know, kind of ends to the same means.
Well, that's a whole separate issue, which we should have an episode on, actually. Totally.
Well, it's like there's another comic that I'm trying to get off the ground that I keep saying I'm going to, and people kind of goad me, and they're like, you just got to make it. And it's one that is a long-form narrative that, like, I don't want to do it in daily updates because, you know, I feel like that would break up the story too much. And I was thinking, like, well, maybe I could do it, like, you know, put it all together and put up a couple pages of it and then just say like, oh, come back and like buy this if you like it. But I'm like, I feel like I'd be, you know, there people who wanted it would pirate it anyway. And it's like, I'm basically making it harder for those people. Like I may as well just, you know, put it all up online and then, you know, maybe update it like Platinum Grit does in like chapters at a time and just, you know, let the people who are going to buy it anyway, buy it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what that reminds me. And I'm saying this now to remind myself, I was actually trying to find people to talk about the whole piracy angle. And I think I just remembered who I was going to have on for that, but he's not going to be available until next month, I think. So, yes, now that short of episode is going to be coming around. We're going to be talking about benefits of piracy as well as the other angle of no piracy, bad. And I might have to still find somebody for the no piracy, bad angle.
I kind of fall on both sides of the fence because it's like, you know, I'm not going to say I don't download stuff, but I buy a lot of stuff too.
I don't think piracy is I don't think piracy is as big a problem as some people would want it to be or think it is. Look at Amazon. They sell more ebooks than they sell print books now.
Yeah. Somebody on the newscast had mentioned is like they shouldn't be thinking as piracy as a problem because in general you're not going to get rid of piracy ever at all. You got they said you got to think about it as competition. Why are they going over here? It's because it's, you know, some reasons include it's not available and people still want it, or they make it so complicated just to get it, you know, or, you know, the, like the price factor, like who's going to go to Comixology and buy, the digital version of Justice League for the same exact price for the print version, which you get to keep and you don't technically own the digital copy. You're like, what the hell, you know? It's there's all these little things.
Steam is such a great example of that. You know, it's like Steam stuff is like, it's cheap and it's easy to get at and it's like on your computer right now. And so it's like, you know, you don't need to pirate a Steam game because you can get it for like $5 on the site anytime you want it.
and that's the other thing. You know, it's your copy and you can download it to any other computer that you log into. Yes, there's DRM on it because it checks and verifies, make sure, you know, that only one of you is on at a time from one computer sort of thing. But that's not a big deal. The thing is like it's cheap, it's easy. You don't have to worry about all the extra cost, you know, the publishers don't have to worry about the extra costs of shipping and store shelves and all that sort of thing. You know, that and that's you know, I don't pirate games anymore. They're there, you know, you can have them and it's easy and it's affordable. You know, that's the whole thing. You know, webcomics, the essential webcomics model is you give it away free and then you sell merchandise or the comic book later. Now, granted, there's more models today, but still it's making that it's available for people to check out and see if they like it and get into it. Cause if they can, just because they see your comic or they download an ebook illegally or something like that doesn't mean that they're going to like it and want to continue. Sometimes they'll just download it because they can.
If I just had my comic like totally as a, you know, you have to pay me something for me to send you out like a little flyer at the end of the month with like four pages in it, like no one would know about my comic. Like,
people
know about it because like, you know, it gets put all over message boards and people use it as like macro faces on 4chan and stuff. Like that's how people find out about it.
Yeah. But, I don't know. We'll save this all for like another episode.
Yeah, I'm sorry I derailed your thing. It seemed like tangentially related.
It's quite all right. I mean, we're getting to the end of this episode. So I wanted to ask, I'm trying to say, think of how I'm supposed to properly say your name again. Olaf?
Yes.
I really try to say names and words correctly in people's languages. Did you have a sort of like conclusion or the end of a thesis is supposed to be? What did you come up with 3 years ago?
I came up with that. Remember, this was before the iPad existed, but my conclusion was that you can't, if you technically ask what is a webcomic, it's any comic on the internet. But if you look at what do people expect when you say the word webcomic, that's something completely different. So that's often short newspaper strips and or XKCD and mostly joke-based stuff. And if you... I had a survey and I asked people what webcomics do you read, and the top four were basically newspaper comics, popular Norwegian newspaper comics that had an online version. And number five was XKCD. So that's what people think of when you say webcomics. So that doesn't mean you shouldn't try to do something different, but there are reasons to question, is there a point in doing this? If my goal is to get readers, should I do this? Should I make a big comic in Flash? No, maybe you shouldn't, because most readers don't really care about all those extra gimmicks. And if you want to get your comic into newspapers, and lots of Norwegian webcomic creators want that. They want to, they make a webcomic and then they hope that one day that comic will be printed in newspapers and magazines. And if you make a big flashy HTML5 presentation, then that's probably not possible.
Right.
So, and And I also looked at money and, well, you can sell your webcomics, but will people buy it? Most people I talked to had never really paid for a webcomic. Mm-hmm. And thought, well, that's a dumb idea. If I want, if you have to pay for your webcomic, I will read another webcomic. So you have to remember that you're competing against everything. So
yeah, you're competing against 20,000 other webcomics.
Yeah. I think I've bought print collections of most of my favorite webcomics. You know, I've got like the Lackadaisy one. I've got the Meek. I've got the TJ Animal. I've got Casey Greens.
Yeah, but that's the print collections, and many people actually buy those. But if you want to make money on your webcomics, according to the people I talk to, you should you can have ads, or you can sell print collections or T-shirts or whatever. But
You're talking about a paywall.
Yeah, I'm talking about a paywall, and many people are very negative to that. So unless you have if you're just Whedon or a huge name that everybody knows, then that would not be a problem. But
It doesn't count. Doesn't matter if you're already famous.
Yeah, that's if you're older than famous.
We have a question for you from the chat room. Somebody's asking, is there a place where they can read your thesis?
Only if they know Norwegian. everything's written in Norwegian, but it's all available online.
Well, there's your answer.
Have you thought of updating the thesis?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be very interesting, but I don't have the time. I have a job now. And I have 1,000 different projects at all times, so I would love to really update this. I would love to translate it. I would love to maybe even print it, but I need the time to do that. So not this year.
Really? How many pages is it?
Not much, including all appendixes. It's 113 pages.
Oh, not much. Okay. so that would take some time.
Not much considering I spent a year writing it.
Right. Okay. So if anybody out there knows Norwegian and would like to to translate his thesis, go over to olafsolstrand.no and contact him.
Someone wants to use Google Translate for it. I think that'd be pretty fun.
Oh boy!
I think I have no. There's no link to that from my webpage now, but I can add that.
Okay.
I will add that, and then I could send you a link to it if you want to do something about that.
Some things that we've been talking about on this episode have to do a lot about the state of webcomics and what doing what you can to get your comic out there, of course. I'm going to be going to a couple of conventions this year, and I'm hoping to do my crash course to webcomics, which has nothing to do about the creation process, but it has everything to do about getting your comic as a webcomic. And I might try to actually record one of those and put it online so people can check it out. I mean, these are for people that they need a little leg up as far as how to put their comic online and what they need to do with that. And I can get them started.
The really fun conventions for like webcomics. Like I don't know how hard it is for you to get up to Canada, but if people who are listening are, you know, in this like Southern Ontario area, TCAF in Toronto it's great. Like it's the last time I went, it was like free to attend because they just want all the money to go to the creators there. And it's like the whole first, they do it in the Toronto Reference Library, and the first floor is all kind of independent press guys, and then the second floor is all webcomics and stuff. So you get like Spike, and you get Danielle Corsetto, and you get Erica Moen, what's her name, Megan Rosalarian from UMe. There's tons of people there, and it's just like it's such a great assortment of print stuff and web stuff, and I don't know, it gets the creative juices flowing. You go there and you just want to draw.
But it's a little bit more complicated as a creator to try and sell in another country, especially Canada, I'm pretty sure there's stuff you have to worry about.
Well, if you've, if it's one of those things like to go see it, or if you've got people listening in Canada, then it's one worth checking out.
Mm-hmm. And that's it. It looks like I'm going to the website at torontocomics.com, May 5th through May 6th. So you can go ahead and check that out. Let's see here. Is there anything else or any other questions from our live listeners that we have for this episode? It doesn't look like it. No, I'm not coming to California. I'm not coming to California. I don't think there's anything to go to California for me.
You didn't get a San Diego ticket in the 7 minutes that they were on sale?
Oh, I have no interest in San Diego Comic-Con. I have zero interest. I'm trying to find conventions where I can go to try to sell Ardra now, because I actually have a comic of my own to sell. Well, sort of my own. Partly my own. One-third my own.
I think there's, like, Small Press Expo and Alternative Press Expo or two, like, indie ones I see a lot of people, like, buzzing about.
I didn't get into SPX, and I wanted to go to... I think I wanted to try to get into Ape, but I think that I can't go there now, and... The thing is, I have to drive to these places, and I have to take time. I have to take vacation to go on these things, and I got to make sure it's practical and worthwhile for me to go enough, or I'm going to have major losses just because nobody knows who I am and stuff. So, but I think we're at.
I'm going to be at Matacon next week.
What's Matacon?
It's in Madison. I got invited to a couple out on the East Coast.
Oh, right. Next month. Well, Madison isn't the East Coast.
Oh, I'm from Canada, so I figured it was...
it's Midwest.
Out. Okay.
You had to draw...
if they, line up near Toronto, I figure it's East Coast.
All right. I think that's about it for the show. Does anybody have anything else to say?
I think I just managed to share the... link to a thesis in the chat room.
Okay.
Okay.
Put it in the show notes, and
I am going to.
Here we go.
Paste and I'll try to I'll try to post this in the show notes as well, as long as I don't lose the link. It is
my university thesis was a 3-minute cartoon about barbarians and zombies.
You went to a cool university.
Yeah. Went to animation school. It's like fine arts clown college.
I missed out. Oh, well. That's what I should have done.
Well, anyway. Well, that is going to be the it. That is going to be it of the Webcomic Beacon this week. You can find out more at webcomicbeacon.com or go to webcastbeacon.com/live for next week when we have another live broadcast and recording of the Webcomic Beacon. I'm trying to figure out what's going to be coming next. I think next week we're going to have – actually, on the 11th, we presently have no show scheduled unless I happen to snag somebody to do a show for. Otherwise, come on the 18th as we're going to talk with Tyler James, talking about his comics group, the Comics Tribe. And then on the 25th, we're going to be talking with the webcomics group, the Webcomic Factory. It's kind of bending the usual rules that I've had for the show as far as what I've been usually. But, webcomics have changed, and I'm going to have to change the show and to adapt to keep talking about stuff. And if there happens to be any sort of past content that we have done that you would like to have us reapproach, like a topic, a webcomics topic.
Who's everyone?
We'll go ahead and take a look at that. As far as we've gotten a couple of emails that I would like to go over from Liz and Jimmy Reed. We've got an email from them saying, "I love your podcast. I listened to about 6 months worth of podcasts at work yesterday. I especially love the advice you gave on the last show about starting webcomics and Twitter. My husband and I have a webcomic called Cuddles and Rage. Our webcomic has been around for a little over a year. I cracked up about the bit about how people get married or have kids and their webcomic days have come to an end. They said they totally took a break for their wedding, but they did come back stronger than ever. So thanks, Liz and Jimmy, for your email. Once again, you can email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com if you have something to share. And on the same note, as far as comics that have ended with weddings, Garrett Williams says his comic Kenny Chronicles actually ended with a wedding, and he didn't realize it was a trope until it was mentioned on our show. Essentially, he says it was like a stage changer, and it went into a new comic called Ferrets versus Lemmings. So it was, well, yes, the one comic did end because of a wedding, but it was, you know, book two, basically. The next...
I feel like a wedding is a good, like, end scene kind of...
End scene, know. Yep. And that's the thing. I also know Badly Drawn Kitties originally ended with a wedding as well. And after a few years, eventually it did come back. But it's a lot much different than what it was. It's more of a gag a day, sort of a blogic almost.
Well, there's a story I want to do that, you know, the projected end for it is basically with a wedding, but then, you know, there's room for it to go into kind of like a sequel, and it's like where all the characters are kind of like 10 years from then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, geez.
Yeah, jump ahead. I mean, I got an idea for I basically am now the owner of majority owner of the webcomic Ardra. Jason had to step down. You can read it on the site, but I think as far as one of Jason's original endings, or the original ending for Ardra, might have been actually a wedding. So we don't know where things are going to be going, like, for an end right now. But we did talk about, you know, just jumping ahead like 10 years or something like that. So certainly I think people think it, like, a lot of times wedding is like sort of like an end product or like the end goal.
It is in life. You're done. That's what I hear. I don't know if it's true.
Well, it shouldn't be, because there's, you know, there's life after weddings. What are you talking about?
It'll never be the same, you know. It's never the same.
Yeah, it can easily turn into like a jump the shark moment.
Right. But, you know, there's things afterwards, and I think jumping ahead to the next generation, or even if you feel like the comic's just not going to be the same, you can just call it something else, like Kenny Chronicles did. You know, but then again, you know, people, you know, it's maybe a better ending than, say, Rocks Fall and Everybody Dies. If you really are just wanting
Seinfeld.
It. Yeah. If you're just really wanting to end your comic. Yeah.
Oh, so, Bobby and the
it
show.
It was all just a dream.
Right. And we're going to be having a show about ending your comic at some point here. I just got to talk to the people once again and see about ending your webcomic. All these things I keep forgetting that I need to reapproach. But okay, I should shut up now. This is the end of the episode. Thanks to everyone who came in the chat room to listen to the show. Thanks to Olaf Moriarty Solstrand for coming on to the show and sharing your thoughts on webcomics. And once again, you can check out his site at olafsolstrand.no. Are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Well, thanks. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what is the good way to answer that in English. I can't remember the word. Should I say you're welcome or
thanks? Thanks. Yes. You say you're welcome or thanks for having me. Yes.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for being had.
Yes, it's great. And once again, thanks to Kelly Turnbull from The Punchline is Machismo.com for
makes you laugh just to say.
There we go. And once again, I have been Fess of just too many things.
And this is Mark of AutumnLake.com.